Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We've had this shift away from, you know, teach me how to do a sales pitch, do a presentation, to a lot more people saying, can you help us with conflict resolution? And when I've said, what kind of conflict are you having? They've said, with each other. We're having conflict with our own team.
Why did I become an executive coach? I saw lots of great people fail to get ahead at work, while their much less talented peers blew right past them. That made me furious, but also curious. What were great people getting wrong? It came down to helping them re-examine what drove success and then helping them make critical shifts, one hard truth at a time.
Feel like you're doing everything you were told, but you're not moving ahead at work nor having the impact you seek? Then welcome to 97% Effective with Michael Winderoth, where we skip feel-good, happy talk and engage experts in pointed conversations about what it really takes to move the needle at work and your career. So if you feel stalled or frustrated or seek that extra edge as you move to the next level, then look no further. This is the Hard Truths Playbook you never got.
Hi, I'm Michael Winderoth, and you're listening to 97% Effective. If you attend the keynote speeches or communication trainings of today's guest, you leave with energy. Part nerdy researcher, part humble evangelist, you won't forget him or his message, and you leave feeling a huge lift. And I'm excited today because we're going to discuss with Richard Newman, communications expert, his latest book, Lift Your Impact. That's McGraw-Hill Press. His book shows you how to transform your mindset, influence, and future to elevate your work, team, and life. Richard is the founder and CEO of Body Talk. Over the past 23 years, his team has trained over 130,000 business leaders around the world to improve their communication and impact. And before becoming a communication coach and keynote speaker, Richard trained as a professional actor and has won the coveted Cicero Grand Prize Award for Best Speechwriter of the Year. Richard, welcome to 97% Effective. Glad that we are able to discuss your book. I think it's almost been 2 years since I was on your podcast to discuss mine, Get Promoted. So now I'm excited to turn the tables and shine the light on the great work that you're doing. Richard, welcome to 97% Effective.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for being on my show as well. I really enjoyed our first conversation.
Let's talk about your book. Your background is fascinating, and one of the things that you said that really kind of struck with me is this power of being shy, because that really intrigues me. We tend to think of power as dominance, gravitas, you know. What do you mean by the power of being shy?
Yeah, so I think, people are often surprised, given what I do. A lot of people will meet me where I'm on a stage and I have 1,000 people in front of me and look like I am completely at home. And I really am. Like, it's a place where I thoroughly love to be, and I've always enjoyed it. So sometimes people come up to me and say, oh, I wish I could do what you do. You're such a natural at this, but I'm just shy, so I couldn't do it. And I say to them, let me just share with you a little secret. So I'm shy, I'm an introvert, I'm also autistic, sort of three labels that you wouldn't expect to be associated with somebody who communicates on stage for a living. But what I've found in the power of being shy is actually that what it meant for me while I was growing up is that I tended to be more in the background of a conversation or in the background of an interaction or a meeting. And so I was doing much more in the way of observing how other people communicate with each other. And if I did speak, I would be speaking about something where I felt 100% confident about my contribution to the conversation. But the rest of the time I was noticing, well, how is this person who is holding court here, how are they speaking? What's working here? Does everyone else seem to be engaged with them? And if so, why? What is it they're doing that's working? And then sometimes I think, well, hang on a second. No, people are switching off here. What happened there? What was that moment that happened? And because I was sort of quieter in those situations, people weren't expecting me to contribute. They weren't aware that I was maybe, you know, quietly observing what was happening. But I would also observe, you know, the audience. Well, what is it that they are captivated by, and what happens with their face? What happens with their interaction when they are really engaged with this or not? And so it got me to this point of being hyper alert of what was happening in interactions. To the point where when I'm now speaking to a large audience, I feel very connected with them. I often say, you know, the way that I like to do my work is that before I go on stage, I focus within. And we can go into that maybe in more depth because I've talked about it in my book. I really go within to get to a place where I'm deeply centered and ready to do my best work. But when I'm out on stage, I'm completely focused on the audience and connected with them to the point where I'm noticing the small changes and variations that are happening with the person sitting on the fifth row in the green shirt. What's happening there in the way that he feels about the people sitting next to him? And so it's been really powerful for me to, rather than have to be the person who's center of attention, of talking in every conversation, I've been able to have much more in the way of observing and taking information that I've learned from those interactions into a place where I can then be useful as a speaker and a teacher.
It's fascinating, and I want to just connect this to some of the work. I used to be a sales trainer, and one of the things that most people think is that it's kind of extroverts who are out there. The problem is they don't listen. And they don't process what's going on. And research, Adam Grant did some of this research way back before his books, showed that it was kind of the ambiverts, right, who are in the middle, who are harnessing the parts of being very observant and listening and honing in on what your audience wants to hear versus simply talking over them.
Yes.
Richard, let's talk about your book. Okay, already a very successful communications company. and your first book, You Were Born to Speak. Why write Lift? What were you seeking to address here in this newest book?
Yeah, so when I wrote my first book, I poured everything I could put into it. And I thought, that's it. That's my thesis. That's my work. It's out there. And then that book came out in 2018. And then in 2020, we went through this pandemic, this lockdown, and there was a massive shift in terms of what our clients needed, what they were going through, and the requests that came in. And so these requests were suddenly shifting for, if I think back sort of to 2010, even 2015, people were looking for public speaking skills, presentation skills, all these sorts of pieces. And then the requests gradually shifted to the point where the last 3 years, there's been three major things that people have asked us for. Firstly, a lot of people came to us saying, we're really struggling with our mindset. Our team are feeling stressed out. They're feeling overwhelmed. They're having much more demands put on them. You know, the company downsized because of the pandemic, and now people are having to answer 400 emails a day and be on 17 Teams calls. And they're trying to homeschool their children through a pandemic and share the Wi-Fi with their partner. And there's all these other things that are going on, and they're feeling burned out. They're feeling stressed. Could you help them there? The second thing that came up was, even if people were at the place of going back into the workplace, suddenly there was less sort of banter and depth of conversation and relationships that were happening. So back in 2019, people might, you know, linger around the water cooler or grab a coffee together or maybe go to happy hour for drinks afterwards. And they would have this additional relationship with the people they were working with, which more recently has become much more transactional, where even if people go into the workplace, they're sometimes feeling lonely or feeling alone, feeling that they're not really sure that anybody truly knows them or cares or appreciates the work that they're doing. And then thirdly, we had people saying to us, you know, our team is showing up, but they're just not really sure why they're here anymore. I think the pandemic made everyone really question, well, what, you know, why am I going to this big glass and steel building and being a cog in this very big machine? What's going on for me? What is the point of all of this? What do I really want to do with my life? And so I wrote this book to answer those three questions, to help people out in three ways. To first of all, help them be a rock in the storm so they can have a mindset where they can be the best version of them no matter what is going on in the world around them. And then once you've figured out that piece, you're being the best version of you. The next piece is to interact with other people, which is always a bit of a challenge. It can challenge your mindset. So how do you then go out from there to have the best influence and impact on people around you, to have deeper relationships and connections? And then once you've got that piece figured out, if you go a bit further out from there, people then think about, well, what's my purpose? What is my legacy going to be? What does my future look like? What am I striving towards? And so the book was designed to give people skills around mindset, communication, and goal setting that would allow them to really lift their impact overall, starting from them going outwards and thinking into their future.
So start with this piece around mindset. It's come up a couple times as you've talked about that. And I think you very much captured how we were coming out of the pandemic. And I think a lot of people are still there. So this part about mindset is so important. What is it that you're bringing here or getting people to think about or do?
So in terms of mindset, there's a few different ways in which we approach this. But one of my favorite areas to talk about is to talk about validation. So we live in this place now where there's so much time that people are spending on social media. And what they're doing is actually living their life based on external validation. So there'll be a number of people who listen to this podcast. And, you know, certainly I've been in this headspace at certain times in the past, where the first thing they do when they open their eyes in the morning is they reach for their phone, which is probably their alarm clock. And before even getting out of bed, maybe what they do is they check social media to see how many likes did I get on my post? How many followers have I got? How many comments? And they're searching for external validation. And even, you know, you might get people who in the middle of the day, they post something and 12 minutes later, they're just itching to know how many likes did I get on this? You know, what reaction did I get? And they go back and they're looking for external validation. Now, the reason this is so important is that if we go back to, it was around 2015, it was Creswell and Sherman in Germany who put together this study where they did a series of experiments based on the Trier social stress test. So they're trying to figure out, you know, what happens to people if you put them through stressful situations and what can help them. And one of the scenarios that they put together was taking people through a very challenging interview experience where the people who were interviewing them were told not to give them any validation at all. They would sit back, fold their arms, shake their head, and occasionally they might say, that's just not good enough. And the person was also, it's part of their series of experiments, they would give people stressful maths questions and so on. And they would measure before and after these situations, they would measure their cortisol, which is the main stress hormone in the body. They'd measure their adrenaline levels and also their heart rate. And what they found is that when they put a person in a situation where they were seeking external validation, like a job interview where you want the other person to be impressed so you get the job, when they came out the other side of that, their cortisol was spiking, their adrenaline was spiking, their heart was beating through their chest. Until they found another way of doing it, which was they took some people through those challenges. And they, before they sent them in there, they said, write down a page for 15 minutes. Just write about the values that you feel define who you are, that you're most proud of. Write down how they have defined key decisions in your life, why you're proud of it, why you use those values to drive your key decisions. And then they sent them into the challenging situation. And they found that when they came out on the other side of, say, a stressful job interview, they'd come out and there'd be no change, no significant change in their cortisol, adrenaline, or heart rate. They'd be fine because they're not looking for the external validation of the interviewer who was never going to give them validation anyway. So what I like about this is if people focus in on their values, and let's say you do it at the beginning of a day, or you do it before an important meeting, or you can even do it partway through an important meeting if a tough decision comes up and you're feeling out of sorts and you're wondering, how do I get back to a good version of me to make a good decision here? You can come on back to your values. And so I encourage people, if they're listening to this, to just take 15 minutes after this podcast and take one piece of paper and write down your top three values. And if you're not sure what those are, these are the key principles that you live your life by. So if you have to make a really important decision where you can go in one direction or the other, what decision do you make and what principles is that based on? Is it based on integrity or health or doing the right thing by your family or something else? What is really driving that decision for you? And so if you think about those at the beginning of each day, you get internal validation and you show up as the best version of you as you go out into the world. So I encourage everybody to think about that piece because that allows you to be that rock in the storm that you need to be sometimes, where we've got political uncertainty, economic uncertainty, there's, you know, there's wars going on, there's all sorts of things that are making people feel stressed in the outside world. So we've got to make sure we come to a good place of calm on the inside world, be good with who we are, and then go out to interact with others.
So that very much feels like this part of kind of lifting yourself, the touchstone that you're drawing upon, and no shortage of social media and validation, you know, instant gratification that's going on. Talk also as you, this other part of the lift is transforming yourself. And you've got these very interesting CAR, C-A-R, pivotal events, pedestrian events. What are you talking about here?
Yeah, so you're right to say that the first thing I talk to people about with concept of lift is think, okay, lift yourself. Then the next piece to do is once you've lifted yourself, then think about, well, how am I going to lift others? And this is where if you go to meet one person or 1,000 people, if you think about that concept of lift, essentially what it is if you've lifted someone, you've taken them from a negative or a neutral state to a positive or a more positive state. So thinking about what could I do to achieve that by the end of this meeting? Now, bear in mind, I talk about state, not feeling. And so it could be that the best thing you can do to lift someone is to get them to a place where they are disappointed with their current results by the end of a meeting. Because that disappointment could give them an energy of motivation where they go, do you know what? I can do more. I believe in myself. I can do more here. This is not the best version of me. And off they go. So that's a good tool for a manager sometimes to have. So that lifting of other people is a real key tool for people to have. And part of that comes down to when you're in an interaction with somebody else, I call this see their greatness. And seeing their greatness means seeing the very best version of them, seeing them being able to do things that they don't even know that they can do. And this has been so critical for me in my career. I'm so grateful for people who have seen my greatness, which I mean, they saw that I was able to do things I didn't even know I could do. So going back about 15 years ago, I gave a talk at a networking event. There was a couple of hundred people in the room. And at that point, I'd only ever run a one-day training course. That's all I knew how to do. That was everything I could think of to teach. And I was really proud of it. And I thought, this is my masterpiece. And this lady came up to me who had just become the head of learning and development for one of the largest telecoms companies in the country. And she said, I want you to run a four-day training event for my managers where we tried doing this with them last year. It just didn't work. They've been put up for promotion. It hasn't happened for them because they're lacking the communication. They really need to get up to that next level. And I know you can do it. And I said to her, okay, when you say 4 days, I usually do a day. And she said, I know you got 4 days in you. I believe that this is going to happen and you're going to figure this out. And here's what these people need. And I went away a little bit scared, but I thought, if she thinks I can do this, maybe I can do this. And so I started to react and build up what I was doing. And suddenly, you know, these days, some people might go on a 6-day training course with us and it feels fairly straightforward to do. But it took someone seeing my greatness to be able to get there. So that's part of the lift piece. So you lift yourself, you aim to lift others through your communication, which can happen through your storytelling, body language, the way you ask questions, the way that you have intentions in a meeting. And the piece that you talked there about the idea of CAR, this was the final piece of lift, which is about lifting your future. Where, you know, some people have a big dream that they might have had at some point. And often these big dreams happen maybe on New Year's Day. And they say, I've got a big resolution I'm going to have. This is the year I'm going to become a billionaire or so on. And then they don't take action on it and it suddenly falls apart. And so I wanted to figure out, is there a way for people to take more control over their future? If they're lifting themselves, lifting others, what does their future look like? And so I came up with this concept of CAR, which is C-A-R, which is based on the research that's out there. And there's lots of good books around, you know, habits and becoming who we want to be, like Atomic Habits, I'm sure many people have looked at, and other pieces around, you know, how do you set goals and really actually achieve them? And having looked at all of these, I realized that there are lots of concepts that come together under this label of C-A-R. So the C-A-R is commitment, action, and routine or ritual. So what does this mean? If people listening to this podcast wanted to achieve something big, the first thing I say to them is think about a commitment, first of all, which is something between 3 to 6 months in the future. And the reason that I say that is that if you say, in 20 years' time, I am going to have achieved all the goals that I want. I'm going to have the weight and the body and the health that I want. I'm going to have the relationship I want. I'm going to have the money I want, whatever it is that you want. Then it's so far in the future that you think, I could probably just take it easy for the next 19 and a half years, and then maybe I'll figure it out then. So it's too far. But equally, if you say to yourself, okay, by the end of this week, I'm going to lose 20 stone and be married to the person of my dreams. It's just too much. Your brain gets into overwhelm and says, well, I'm already busy. My diary's packed. I can't do it. But if you create a commitment that's between 3 to 6 months from now, then your brain starts to think, okay, that sounds exciting that my life would be there, and I'd actually better start working on it. That's something I need to move towards. So an example I give is running the marathon. I had been in a place where when I was younger, I wanted to run, but I wasn't able to. My wife and I had tried training for a half marathon at one point, and my shins were starting to really ache. So I gave up and it wasn't going to work for me. Then I got a back issue. And then I got to the point where I was offered the place in the London Marathon by my favorite charity, a charity I'd been supporting for more than 10 years at that point. And they only had one place. And I knew that they would only be given one place every 5 years. And they wanted to give that place to me. And I thought, okay, it's 6 months until the marathon. That's a commitment that I can make. I'm going to tell people I'm making this commitment. I'm going to go for it. The second part of then achieving that dream future that you want to have is taking actions towards that future. And it's best if once you've made that commitment between 3 to 6 months from now, immediately, before you even sort of get up or do anything else, you take one step towards it where you think, I've started this journey. It's almost like thinking, okay, I know where the Wizard of Oz is. I'm going to start putting my foot on the yellow brick road. I'm not there yet, but I have started the path. I'm moving in this journey. And it's a very powerful way of telling your mind, this is happening. This journey has started, and I'm going to keep going in this direction. The last piece that I add in, though, is that, you know, some people get disheartened and they think, oh, I don't need to meet the Wizard of Oz. Forget it. I've just, you know, I met the Scarecrow. That's probably good enough for now. Maybe I can just sit down and relax. And so you can get thrown off by day to day, or things come up that are unexpected. And I used to do this all the time where, like, I tried weightlifting occasionally. I did it maybe 3 times and just gave up, where life got in the way and I thought, well, I'll try it next year, and it never happened. So when I was doing this marathon training, I thought, what am I going to do if I get thrown off? And the London Marathon happens in April, and I'm training in the UK, and it got to about February where we had a massive downfall of snow, and I was due to do a 30K run. And part of my mind said, I'm not going out in the snow. I'm going to break a leg, potentially. Clearly, I should give up on my routine of going out and running 3 times a week. And then I thought, hang on a second. I haven't just got a routine of running 3 days a week. I've also got a ritual that can get me back on track. My ritual was that I had a piece of music that I would listen to, and I would think about all the people I was going to help, that I'm raising money for by running this London Marathon. And I listened to that song like for 3 minutes, just thinking, this is what I'm going to do. I really believe in what I'm doing here. And that was enough to get me back on track, where I thought, I'm just driving to a gym. I drove to a gym, I took an iPad with me, I put it in front of me, and I ran on a treadmill for, I think it was 3 hours straight, to the point where anybody who was in the gym had left, and more people had come, and then they'd left. And then the janitor came to me and said, you need to leave the gym because we're closing the gym. So I just managed to go about doing something that seems crazy, perhaps, to most people. But because I had that commitment, I had the initial action, then I had that routine going for me, and then a ritual that would get me back on track towards it. So if you really want to redesign your future, lift what your future results might be, commitment, action, results can help you get there.
So very much you eat your own medicine here, and this system. I love the analogy, the CAR as a way of applying that in anything that you're going to learn or do.
You've been listening to 97% Effective with your host, Executive Coach Michael Winderoth. If this interview is making you think, make sure to share it with a friend. Now, back to our interview.
Richard, the book also has immense practical tips throughout, and I would love to, you know, dive into one of those, which is, you know, lifting yourself, lifting others. No shortage of contentious situations in organizations, and those who maybe because of where they sit in the organization, how they see the world, finite resources, they turn into opponents, and so, you know, or blockers. And in organizations, we need to get things done sometimes with people who we don't see eye to eye with. And not to bring a downer into this, right? But when you have, you know, adversaries, you do talk about how to kind of convert them or ways to kind of lift and work through that. A few of your thoughts and tips on this strategy, because I know that navigating conflict is a big part out there for people that creates a lot of that downward pressure against the lift.
Yes. Yes, and I'd say, first of all, for anyone listening to this, if you're finding that there's been more conflict in your life recently, you're not alone. So firstly, there was a study done, I must go and find the original statistics on this, but it showed that there's been a marked shift in how amicable people are willing to be with each other, particularly in the workplace, that where it, back in 2019, I guess because we were around each other that much more, and therefore maybe more understanding of each other, we're breathing the same air as each other, that we're more amicable. And these days, people are much less likely to be that way. There's a lot of divisiveness that's there in the media and in politics these days as well. But what we're also finding with our clients is that we've had this shift away from, you know, teach me how to do a sales pitch, do a presentation, to a lot more people saying, can you help us with conflict resolution? And when I've said, what kind of conflicts are you having? They've said, with each other. We're having conflict with our own team. And so when we deep dive into that, sometimes it's conflict with, you know, suppliers and that sort of thing as well. But when we dove into it, we found, okay, there's things that people can use, tools that people can use in order to get through those situations. And so the first thing that we talk about, a piece that I mentioned earlier, is before you go into a challenging situation, see the greatness of the other person. Now, why is that important? I was coaching a lady who was working with, she was doing a negotiation with a big global company, one of the brands that every human on the planet knows. And she said that she had decided when she was going to this negotiation that it felt like sort of David and Goliath, and the person was using her as a punching bag and was just trying to make her feel terrible, make her look terrible, make her life terrible. And I said, is it possible that there's something else to this story? Is it possible, let's say, that this person is being really tough in this negotiation because last year he was really soft on someone and his boss said, if you ever do that again, you're fired. And this is the month where you really have to make things work, and it's putting pressure on them, and they've got a mortgage and they're really scared about losing their house, and they're coming into this this meeting with tension. And she suddenly said, okay, that's possible. That is possible. I can see this person as a human being, not as a tormentor for a moment. And we broke it down. I mean, if someone's tormenting you, then clearly that's a different situation, but there was nothing about that there. It was really just a story of where is this person coming from? So seeing a greater version of them helps. Then there's a journey that you can go on. And I talk about this. First of all, go to the balcony view before you get into the details, which is where the first thing to do in conflict is to figure out what is the challenge for you and what is the challenge for them. Where are you right now? What are the big challenges? And see if there's anything that you have in common with each other, where something you can both agree, this isn't working for either of us. And you can figure out, it helps if you talk about, you know, what are your values? What are their values? Are there some pieces that are misaligned there? And then before, this is what a lot of people do, they go from that challenge, they go, okay, we can fix it over here. I'll give you 7.4% in this negotiation. And they've missed the point. And the person says, that's not going to work. And then it becomes more conflict. The second thing you have to do, once you've figured out, well, what are my challenges and your challenges? And we've been very clear about that. You then want to jump ahead. Forget about the solution. Jump ahead to, where would you love things to be 6 months or a year from now? What are we really truly aiming for? What does that look like, sound like, feel like? Why does that matter? And you're looking for what is known in negotiation circles as ZOPA, which is the zone of possible agreement, where you suddenly go, okay, we have concerns here. We have something we want to create over here. And there's a little place of a zone of possible agreement, maybe not on everything, but maybe on one thing. And once you've done that, you've done the balcony view, where you've sort of looked from the big picture thinking, okay, that's the whole thing. Then you can start to deep dive into, what are some practical things that we could do that would move us forwards together? And so once you've done that, if ever you get to that point of just getting stuck and the person just won't shift because they're so obsessed with 3.7% and that's the only number they care about, you can just come back up to the balcony view and say, let's just take a break for a moment. Let's come back up to our big picture. We said that we're having a challenge here. We said we want to get over here. Let's just focus on that for a moment. And then let's just deep dive and see, does that 3.7% really matter that much? And the final piece to say, I mean, I'm abridging a lot of this, but the final piece to say that is key in conflict resolution is to agree one step that both people will take before they go back and do anything else. So that, again, like that, you know, that follow the yellow brick road, you've taken one step on the journey. And so you've both shown a sign of commitment. And the reason that's important is sometimes you might feel at the end of the meeting, whew, that was a good conversation. I feel like we've really resolved things. And then people go back to their day to day and they're sort of stuck in the habits that they had before. And a week later, they can't remember what they resolved. And then suddenly the conflict comes up. And so it's key to take that first step towards that resolution so that you're making progress together. People love the sense of coming together, facing a challenge and making progress together. And that's a great way to build a relationship.
Yeah, this is a masterclass on conflict resolution and negotiations altogether. And I mean, I'm hearing there a lot around the empathy and questions, kind of thinking from the other person's point of view, and then the kind of joint exploration that you're talking about in there. That part of kind of learning someone other person's point of view or asking good questions, is there a good one that you use when you're really trying to, and you've got conflict that you're seeing that to
yes.
get at what someone's underlying motives are or where they're coming from?
Yeah, there's a really simple way to look at this, which was when I came across concepts in this area, this was something that really struck me about the questions that I was asking people and when it was working and when it wasn't. And so what we've put this together as is something we call the three levels of questions, where what we tend to find is that what most people do day to day, whether they are with people personally or professionally, particularly if they're with people professionally, or if they may be dealing with a supplier or somebody in a shop that they bump into, is that most people are just asking first level questions. And first level questions are superficial transactional questions based on facts and data, which would be what, when, where, which. Try to figure out details around things. So if you're speaking to someone at work and you're trying to understand the situation, you might say, okay, so when did this happen? And what did it happen for? And which of these people were involved? And it's important to build up context. But what we do is sometimes we build up all the facts and then we make a jump, an assumption where we go, okay, I've heard everything I need to know at this point. And we judge a book by its cover and we suddenly think we know the entire story. And we say, based on this transactional knowledge that I've got, I suddenly understand exactly what needs to be done and it doesn't go anywhere. It's not working. You don't really know the full story. Also, importantly, if you ask loads of transaction questions or loads of sort of fact and data questions, somebody can start to feel interrogated to the point where they think, just stop asking me questions.
Right.
So sometimes, people have maybe been told, even, you mentioned to me earlier that you've been involved in sort of looking at sales training and so on. Sometimes people are told, just ask lots of questions. But it depends on the type of question, because you can get to the point, and I've been on the receiving end of this sometimes, where people have asked me a number of questions where I've said to them, like, where are you going with this? I don't want to answer any more of your questions, because frankly, I'm just feeling like I'm a bit defensive at this stage. I feel interrogated. So once you've had a few of those questions where you just start to understand the context, the piece that's important to do is to think, okay, can I move from facts and data questions down to feeling questions? Just to go from treating this person like a human doing to treating them like a human being. Is there, what am I missing here? Because you need to not just speak to their brain, but also speak to their heart and understand what are their thoughts, what are their opinions, what are their feelings, what matters to them beyond the facts of this case. And when you ask those questions, sometimes people are so relieved that suddenly, finally, somebody actually cares about what they think, about what they feel, not just the numbers that they can give them, but who they are as a human being. So that can really open up a conversation and get you to a place where you can start to, shift things forwards. And, a story that comes to mind on this was, I believe it was Reagan and Gorbachev, where they were having challenges dealing with negotiations, many years ago. And Ronald Reagan was about to walk away from the conversation. And he took a few steps away and he said, no, I'm not going to walk away from this. He just turned back and he said, let's just start over. My name's Ron. Let's have a conversation with each other. Let's just treat each other as people and see what can happen here. So I encourage people to go down that human route. If you are trying to really understand someone and build a good relationship, get to that level where you're asking about feelings. What you might notice is that your friends and family will probably ask you those questions anyway. You walk through the door at the end of the day and they say, how are you? How are you feeling? How's your day? What's going on for you? You seem like you are excited about something, or you seem like you're a bit worn out by something. Like, let me know how you're feeling right now. And, I might naturally, I've got two kids, I might do it with them as well. Like, how are you feeling after today at school? What's that like for you? Rather than saying, what was the first period? What was second period today at school? What was third period? What time did you end lunch break? Which is, that first level. The third level of question we might need sometimes and we might not some other times. But third level is understanding the deeper values, motives, and drivers that are pointing someone in a certain direction with their behavior. And if you don't understand them, sometimes you can be really lost about who they are and what they want, what they need from you. And so if you can get to that lower level of conversation, if you get to the point of marrying someone, I've been married to my wife now, we've been together since 2002. So we've been together 21 years, married for 19. And you get to that level where you know someone's values, you know what's driving them, you know in a various situation, you kind of can predict what direction they're going to go in better than other people because you've seen what drives them in certain situations. And so if you can get to that place with people that you are working with, then you're going to have a much more powerful connection. And what I like to do as a speaker, if I'm booked to go on stage in front of 1,000 people and really connect with them, I want to know that question before I get on stage. So I'm always mindful of asking a client of mine. I might say, okay, where are you at the moment? You know, what are your goals? What are your challenges you're having? Where is the company right now? What's the strategies? So I understand the surface level. Then I want to check in with how are people feeling right now? Was it a great year? People feeling buoyant, or were there any challenges? Anybody let go at the moment? Like, what's that feeling that you've got right now? I might even check in on that at an event. If I'm arriving, say, on day two of a conference, I want to check, what's the feeling right now that people have? How are they feeling after the other speakers that they've had? But the key thing I want to understand is, what is it that truly deeply drives the people in the room? If there was a collective driver of some sort, what is that? Because if I connect with that in the first few minutes of being on the stage, then the audience will look at me and say, he gets us. He knows what we're going through. He knows what matters to us. And therefore, I'm going to listen. And so that's really key for going away from that sort of superficial level of relationships, or feeling lonely as well, even, you know, feeling lonely in a room of people, to get into a place where you think, no, I understand these people and I feel connected with them, and I therefore can build a better relationship.
Yeah, your book, Lift, I mean, at heart is around connection. And I mean, boy, oh boy, we need more of that in the world right now. We're not going to do justice to your book here with the few questions that we were able to do a deep dive on, Richard. But is there any central part I didn't talk about that you want to just call out to people as we're come to an end?
I think, I spend a lot of time in the book going through various pieces around, I touch on body language in there. I talk about storytelling in there as well as a way of communicating with people. And, you know, it's always been important to me to think communication is not necessarily just constantly talking. There needs to be a give and take, and there needs to be a sense of understanding, how do you light up somebody else's mind with your information such that they'll be thoroughly engaged with it? So I'd encourage people to, if they want to take a look at the book, that'd be great. But also to take a look at your communication and just consider, are you really in a position where you think, look, my idea is great, it talks for itself. This concept is so good, it speaks for itself. This product is so good, it speaks for itself. They never do. Your ideas, your products, your services, your strategies, they never speak for themselves. You have to do it. And so therefore, understanding the concepts of storytelling and delivery skills that allow you to light up the mind of the other person when you share those ideas is fundamental, because you can sometimes see in communication that if someone's got a brilliant idea, but they deliver it poorly, then it's not engaging and it can get dismissed and forgotten. Whereas you can take an inferior strategy, but communicated really well. People engage with it, they understand it, they say, okay, let's go in that direction. So what we really want to do is have great communication skills combined with great ideas, and therefore it's better for everybody. So I like to be able to help people bring that to life. And if they have a deep dive understanding of how storytelling really works to light up the human mind, then they can use that to move their ideas and influence people and move things in the right direction. So I encourage people to go further with understanding that, never just taking it for granted that I should just be myself and ideas will speak for themselves. They won't. You really got to work on this and understand that, you know, communication is not based on what you feel like saying, but it's what does the other person need from me in this situation in order for us to collectively get to the goal that we're heading towards. So that's a place that I'd encourage people to explore in more detail.
Fascinating. And your book is just released, but I'm going to ask the question anyway because you're an active mind. What's next for you? What is the idea that's kind of percolating in terms of big idea that needs to be put out there and shared?
Yeah, a good question. Well, I think that there's a piece within the book that I started to work on, which I'm very keen to expand on, which is I had a piece in there around how do you expand who you are and your potential? Because I think there's so many people who are boxed in, where sometimes we are told, you know, I've got labels attached to me, which from various sources of being shy, introvert, and autistic. We can also go through personality tests that tell us that we're a red profile, or we're an INTJ profile, or we're an elephant profile, and so on. And often they can cause us to get sort of stuck in a rut and feel a bit burned out to the point where we need to leave that professional and leave that relationship to go and find another part of ourselves. So what I'm really keen on doing at the moment is to show people how to explore more of who they are, not just get stuck with one particular label, one particular way of doing things, or just rely on a couple of strengths, but really truly understanding their full potential. And so I started to open up into that in the book, and there's been a few people who've said to me, you could write an entire series of books just on that piece of how people find more of who they are through looking at storytelling archetypes that we can use to expand our behavior, expand our mindset, and become all that we need to be to overcome the future challenges we may be facing. So that's something that I'm looking at, and also expanding from professional development across into personal development to give people a more expansive and enjoyable life. So that's what's on the cards for me.
Totally awesome. Richard Newman, founder and CEO of Body Talk and author of Lift Your Impact. Richard, I'm going to have all these in the show notes. Best way for people to engage you or reach you through your website, other means?
Sure. So people can find Lift Your Impact on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere that you get books. And they can also find more about the book on liftyourimpact.com/ the book. I think it's up there, or certainly liftyourimpact.com. People can find out information. And then find me on LinkedIn, Richard Newman Body Talk. Find me on Instagram at Richard Newman Speaks. But thank you so much, Michael, for having me on.
And thank you, Richard.
Thanks for listening to 97% Effective, where we skip happy talk and help you break through and ascend one hard truth at a time. Help others discover this show. Leave a review and rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like what you heard, you can get free resources, including the first chapters of Michael's book, Get Promoted, on his website, www.changwinderoth.com. That's www.changwenderoth.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.